find his work on the front page of the Register Guard. He's fresh off double duty, covered Ducks at Cal and Berkeley, Pac-12 Media Day. Catch up with his columns online, registerguard.com, on Twitter. Enjoy information, rational thought, the occasional sarcasm. Use the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, a good Tuesday to you, sir. How's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you?
Awesome. Great night for sports, World Series, NBA starts, so I could be a little childish and silly, so I'm psyched. I want to start. You wrote about eight-man football. I called high school football for years, but I really don't follow it. You were in Marcola. You talked with Mohawk coach Jeff Lytle, whose team got waxed 64-6. But his concerns go beyond the score. So, in essence, he told you, not really sure he's going to have a program to coach soon. Why is that?
Well, I went out to do that column because I'm really fascinated with eight-man football, small-town football, kind of what I grew up with. It's just, you know, it's a slice of Americana, you know, to go
sure.
to a small town on a Friday night and watch a football game. And unfortunately, that has become a little bit endangered in a lot of places because enrollment in rural areas has been shrinking. Schools have been getting smaller. It's hard for a lot of these rural schools in Oregon to even have enough guys to field an eight-man football team. Mohawk, where I was, they had 12 players suited up that night. Another team in their league had 10 or 11. So, I mean, they're
wow.
getting to the point where they barely got eight guys to put on the field. And, yeah, the coach at Mohawk, who I was talking to, said he's looked out at the future and at the classes they have coming up, and there's just not enough boys in those classes for him to feel confident that they're even going to have a program in a few years. So it's kind of a sad commentary on the state of rural America in some ways about, you know, jobs have gone elsewhere and populations have shifted and left a lot of these small towns really hurting. And, you know, the football team kind of becomes a microcosm for a lot of things that the community is going through as well.
Yeah, in particular, you talked with Aaron Longo, who's the athletic director, and I think you said the cross-country coach at Mapleton, and it wasn't that long ago that they were kind of a thriving program and community. And what did he have to say to you about, you know, why they had their so-called glory days and the factors that currently exist that have led to, as you mentioned, such a substantial decline?
Well, in Oregon, a lot of it is the timber industry. In Mapleton, they had the Davidson Industries Mill, which at one point employed like 450 people and was really kind of the center of the community. And that closed in 2004. And then they also had a U.S. Forest Service station that relocated out of Mapleton. So, they, you know, it's what's going on there, I think, is what has happened in a lot of rural communities in Oregon, where the timber industry has kind of dried up, and they've had a few other businesses leave, and it just makes it tough because, you know, there just isn't work for people in those communities, and also, you know, the housing can be really expensive. You know, new construction in those areas, it's not affordable for a lot of families with kids who might be playing football, so that makes it tough, too.
Yeah, I saw some of those numbers for what it costs real estate-wise. I go, whoa! All right, let's move to Oregon football. On Twitter, you insinuated you had an article in the works when they were down 20, then you had to kind of pivot. But overall, like you tweeted out, you know, it's great they showed grit and spirit, but it's amazing, and you wrote this, how the standard for Duck football has shifted, no?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to kind of separate the moment from the big picture. And in the moment, yeah, you can be encouraged about the fact that Oregon came back from three touchdown deficit, got that game to overtime, almost won. Hey, now that's great. The team hasn't quit. They showed some fight. But still, at the end of the day, they've lost five in a row. And you know, like I said in that column, hopefully the standards at Oregon haven't fallen so far that losing a close game to Cal is just like some kind of cause for celebration, you know. It's kind of a weird place for Oregon now because I've heard from a couple fans who have said, well, it's not really about wins and losses the rest of the season. It's just about showing improvement. And my response to that was, since when?
Yeah.
Since when is not about wins and losses at Oregon? I still think it is. You know? Even if it's the difference between 4 wins and 5 wins or whatever, Oregon needs to win some games the rest of this season. And a bowl game now looks like a long shot. I think it would mean something if they could get there. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's still about wins and losses. And it was an encouraging sign that Oregon fought back in that game. But they still lost, still 5 in a row, and they really need to get one Saturday against Arizona State.
Yeah, and I think John Neal put it best. He's like, yeah, this is Oregon. There are no moral victories.
We
talked with Austin Meek of Register Guard. One of the issues that jumped off the page at Berkeley was Royce Freeman. And you look at his last two games, you throw out one play, a 22-yard run against Washington, 25 carries, 38 yards. I know he was injured, and if he's not healthy, first of all, can we all agree something's not right? And if he's not right, does it make sense to have him out there?
That's what I was asking during that game, is, you know, why are they still running this guy out there when he obviously is not himself? Now, I've never seen Royce Freeman go backwards on as many runs as he did in that Cal game. And there was another play where it looked like he had the edge and he was going to turn the corner and turn it into a long run, and instead he just kind of hobbled out of bounds.
Yep.
You know, after that play, I said, something's not right with this guy. And, you know, it almost feels like, reading between the lines, that maybe Royce is being a little more cautious about his health than Oregon is, even. And I know there are some fans who will say, you know, if you're going to put the jersey on, you got to, you know, put yourself in harm's way for the school and give it absolutely 100% every snap. But you know, I don't blame Royce Freeman if he's looking at his future and saying, you know, I have a chance to make a lot of money in the NFL. I could go out there and beat myself to a pulp the rest of this season, and maybe we win 5 games instead of 4. But you know, I'm going to dial it down a notch and try to preserve my health. If that's what he's saying, I'm not going to criticize him for that. But something clearly isn't right with him, and I do think it's gotten to a point now where you have to ask, are they doing anybody any good putting him out there if he's not able to do more than he did last week?
No, it doesn't even look like the same back. You know, it's kind of ironic, the two big comebacks, Colorado here, Cal last Friday, ended with a bad decision by a relatively new quarterback to end the game, but in each case, you know, you look at the long pass, the buffs through that got intercepted, that started the comeback. And, of course, this week, up 20, like you said, Cal kind of got cute. And on two occasions, it's like they kind of opened the door and aided the Duck comeback.
Yeah, they totally did. And, you know, if Cal had lost that game, there would have been some real pointed questions for Sonny Dykes about what they were doing on a couple of those fourth downs. You know, they had the quick kick from Davis Webb that goes about 10 yards, and then they went for another one near midfield and didn't make it. And that really opened the door for Oregon. And, you know, Justin Herbert, coming off that game, that's one thing you do have to acknowledge, is Justin Herbert really made some plays in that game. And he made the mistake at the end, and that's what's going to stick with him. But, man, he put some balls into some really tight windows. And yeah, Cal opened the door for Oregon for sure, but Justin Herbert was the guy who walked through it. You know, he took advantage of that little opening and kept Oregon in that game.
No, he was fantastic. And, you know, sometimes you make an observation. I don't know if you saw it, but after the interception, you know, it's game over, it's heartbreaking, and obviously he judges himself probably more harsh than anybody could. But it seemed like every single solitary person on that staff and roster went over, and in essence, you could tell their body language was like, yo, don't you even sweat this. You were unbelievable today. Was that kind of the common theme?
Yeah, well, and the first person to go up to him was Mark Helfrich and picked him up off the turf, and I thought that was a really poignant scene, and it was too bad that it was such a bad deadline on that game and didn't really have a chance to get into it, but if I'd had more time, I think that's what I would have wanted to write more about, was just that scene of Mark Helfrich going up to Justin Herbert on the turf and know, just picking him up, and I'm sure he had a few words of encouragement for him, and that was a powerful scene to me, especially with everything that's going on at Oregon. You know, all the turmoil and all the questions about the team, and had they quit and had they cashed it in, and that one moment showed to me that Mark Helfrich does still have the back of the team, and I think at least a big part of portion of the team still has Mark Helfrich's back too.
No, I agree. Let's get to Pac-12 basketball, a media day in San Francisco. Your piece had a theme of newer not necessarily being better, which you could apply to some of the super freshmen who come in as one and dones. But from Oregon's point of view, well, they've got some newbies that folks are excited about, and be it what Dana Altman said, the reason they're so highly touted in league is because, man, they got a lot of experience.
Yeah, well, you've watched Pac-12 basketball the last few years. You know how weird this is, because Oregon has been the team that had to rebuild the roster every single year. And the first game rolls around, and you're like looking at your roster, like, okay, yeah. Who's this guy? Who's this guy? I don't remember this guy. It's a total role reversal now this year, where Oregon is the team in the Pac-12 that has pretty much everybody back. And you look around the league, not very many teams are in that position. And there's a bunch of teams in the Pac-12 who totally just started from scratch. And there are some exciting players coming into the league. Lonzo Ball at UCLA, Markelle Fultz at Washington. Those are two freshmen that there's a lot of buzz about, and I'm excited to see those guys. But if it comes down to picking the team that has the best shot to win the Pac-12, clearly it's got to be Oregon, because obviously they're talented. They showed that last year. And they've got another year of experience with all those guys together. So clearly Oregon's the team to beat going into the Pac-12 season.
Final thought for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. I said yesterday, nobody in sports radio has ever done a Monday show talking about the Cubs in the World Series. It starts tonight. John Lester, Corey Kluber. Do you have a preference, a prediction? Are you, just in anticipation of this series where some long drought is going to end? What's your personal view of this series?
Well, before the season, in my baseball prediction column, not to brag about anything here, but I did pick the Cubs to win the World Series. So I guess I got to stick with that now that they're in it. I do sort of feel like Cleveland just has completely gotten overlooked in all the run up to the World Series. I mean, it's all about the Cubs and breaking their long World Series drought, and rightfully so. That's a huge story. But Cleveland has a drought of its own, and I don't think you can just overlook the Indians, even though I think ultimately probably the difference in the series is the fact that Cleveland doesn't have all of its starting pitching. If they had everybody healthy, man, that would be a tough team to beat in a seven-game series. And having watched the Indians in the AL Central the last few years, I sort of had a feeling that with that pitching they had, they could really be a factor at some point. But Corey Kluber's great. That would be a tough game for the Cubs to win tonight, because Kluber has been almost untouchable in the postseason. But I think over the course of the series, I'd probably lean a little bit to the Cubs.
All righty. Well, we're back home. We're back to our Saturday routine. Always appreciate your time. You can catch up with him at Austin Meek RG, Register Guard, registerguard.com. You enjoy the rest of your week and the World Series, and look forward to seeing you up on Press Row Saturday.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Same to you.
All right. Take it easy, Austin.